From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening. I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and I'd like to welcome everyone to a well-attended Tuesday Topics on an evening where we hope that the software gods will be kind. Let me begin by thanking our producer, Brian Charlson, and our able recorder-editor, Mr. Steve Bauer, for the work that they do every week to make sure that the Tuesday Topics that comes out to everyone is a wonderful and appropriate program. And of course, let me express our appreciation at ACB Radio to George Buys, whose talking community makes this software available. Without this software, Tuesday Topics would be Tuesday on Topics. This evening we have two guests, one of whom I know well and one of whom I've just met. The two guests are from the American Foundation for the Blind. One is their vice president for policies and procedures and everything else, and that's Paul Schrader from Washington, D.C. And we also have the opportunity to get to know a little bit better Mr. Darren Burton, who has been working a lot in the access technology area. And I'm actually going to pick on Darren first to start us off, just to get a better idea. Most of us in ACB actually know Paul Schrader pretty well. But Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for AFB so that folks will get an idea of how you fit into the price of cheese. And welcome to our program.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me. I am a national program associate at AFB Tech, which is our product evaluation laboratory here in beautiful Huntington, West Virginia. And it's a great job. We gather gadgets in, we play around with them, we see how accessible they are, we write about them for our Access World magazine, and then we work with industry to hopefully get them to make the devices more accessible, more user-friendly, more tactile, more speech output, things like that. So you can read our articles, certainly if you're interested in cell phones, on our AFB.org website on the Access World page.
Excellent. Thanks, Darren. Earlier this summer, AFB published a document that announced the beginnings of a new initiative to try to make cell phones more accessible. If you can, give us a little bit of an idea of where the cell phone initiative came from, and then tell us a bit about what you hope to accomplish with it.
We've been looking at cell phones at AFB Tech and in our Access World magazine and working with industry for the last, since 2003. And, in 2003, the scene was dreadful. We looked at a bunch of phones. We called a bunch of companies. We got their top phones. We got the ones they said were accessible. And often, or more often than not, it was a flat as glass, a key panel with no speech output or anything, to access the information that's displayed on the screens of cell phones and to get at all the wonderful features you can do on cell phones these days. So we've been doing this work for about, like I said, about 4 years, and Paul looked at it and said, okay, where are we? We've come so far, but we really have a long way to go. So we wanted to look at how the effects of Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act, which requires cell phone accessibility from both the manufacturers and the service providers. So we wanted to look at what effect that had. And honestly, in what our feelings about this were, and we confirmed this by putting out some messages in our community asking people about their feelings about cell phone access, and our email inboxes and telephone went nuts. And we had so much interest in this issue. So we gathered several, peoples that we contacted, and we asked them what their experiences are with cell phones. We gathered that data. We had them fill out the FCC Section 255 complaint form, and we gathered all this data, and we're putting it together, and we sent letters out to all the manufacturers with, the information about the complaints that people had. So, we thought it was a big issue. The community thinks it's a big issue. I think that there's been a lot of work done in the cell phone area, and we can talk about that later. but we do think there's a long way still to go. So we're in the middle of the process. We've contacted all of the manufacturers. We've collected the complaints. And again, Paul, on his end in the policy group in Washington, that does more of that stuff than we do on the tech end. But they've got the complaints. They've contacted everybody. We've actually begun to get a lot of response back from the service providers, such as Sprint. AT&T has always been active in working with us and trying to do things. Verizon, we met with Verizon a couple weeks ago. So we're getting a lot of feedback from them, and we're beginning to educate them on what it actually means for cell phone accessibility and what the issues are. I'll tell you what, so far we haven't heard a lot from the manufacturers yet, but that's sort of an update, and I hope I didn't go on too much, but hopefully I answered your question.
You did fine. Paul Schrader, you want to see if you can add something to what's been said?
Darren's got it about right. We have been working on this issue, both the access investigation side as well as the policy side, since the initiation of the Telecom Act of 96, which is, of course, where Section 255 is found. And back to your question as to why, we have been intermittently trying to gauge the user community, the blind community, about their accessibility concerns and sense of where the cell phone industry is. Somebody may have already said, Section 255, the requirement for telecommunications access, as well as Section 508, the requirement for government procurement, the regulations are currently being looked at by a committee. And we thought this was a good time to gauge where the blindness community thought the cell phone industry was in terms of accessibility. Also, of course, Darren has been doing a lot of investigations and analysis and evaluations of cell phones in our publication Access World, which is available on the web. So Darren's right. We were inundated with people expressing concerns about the current state of accessibility in cell phones. And so we decided to take a look at that in a more specific way and to start working more directly with consumers and industry, trying to see if we could improve matters.
So the initiative started with the filing of some complaints with the Federal Communications Commission and with contacts being made both with service providers and manufacturers to try to analyze the current state of the game. And so I guess the next question, and while we've still got him, let's start with Paul Schrader, and then we'll let Darren add on to it right after he does. What is the state of the game? Have we reached nirvana yet? Do we have accessible cell phones everywhere? And are we in a state where good and joy flows every which where?
All right. I'll give that a shot. Okay, I tell you what. We have come a long way. We're moving the ball down the field, as the football coaches like to say. But we're not anywhere near where we would like to be. Tell you what, I would put cell phones in two categories. The off-the-shelf phones, where you can go in, hopefully into a store and buy one and get some halfway accessibility. Many people are familiar with the LG phones with voice command, a couple of Motorola phones from Sprint or from Nextel. The one kind of in that category would be the Oasis phone you can get from Toshiba. Well, these are phones where you don't have to add any software. The Oasis phone available from Toshiba has, you know, full accessibility, no screen. So we have that. Those phones, and we would call sort of off the shelf. Then the third-party software phones. We've got now the Symbian phones. Very many people are familiar with Tox and Mobile Speak on the Symbian phones. Now we have Windows Mobile smartphones and Windows Mobile Pocket PC, which are a little more robust version of the Windows Mobile operating system, the phones with the PDAs and the touchscreens. The smartphones are catching up these days, though. So, and then with those phones, with operating systems, we have third-party software. We have Code Factory software available. They have screen magnifiers and screen readers for all three of those categories. We have Tox, which has the screen reader, and their Zoom's screen magnifier, which is from Nuance. MobileSpeak has the MobileSpeak and Mobile Magnifier. Sorry to get too confusing there. But the Nuance has Tox and Zoom's in the Symbian area. And then Dolphin, the makers of Supernova HAL screen reader, screen mag for computers, have Smart HAL for the smartphone market and Pocket HAL for the Pocket PC market. So we do have some phones available, and I hope that, you know, wasn't too confusing, but you can certainly go to our afb.org/cellphones page to learn to get all the details of that. We're upgrading it as we speak. I don't want to go on too long about this, but it's a lot to say. We do have those phones available with several service providers, but the problems are when you walk into a store, nobody knows what to tell you, and the phones often aren't there. You can't test them out. Even when you call the service providers, accessibility phones or what, or phone number, they often don't know. We're not finding any accessible manuals for a lot of these phones, certainly the off-the-shelf phones, and the third-party software phones. The software like MobileSpeak and HAL and Zooms and Talks do have good manuals, but the phones for themselves don't have good manuals. So, you know, we have some phones that are fully accessible and halfway accessible, but we don't have a lot of knowledge about that when you contact the companies. On the good side, we do have AT&T that has subsidized the cost of Talks over the years and is now announced subsidizing MobileSpeak, the Code Factory products, on one or two or maybe three of those platforms. We haven't heard the final word, and we haven't heard if they're going to subsidize the whole price. We certainly hope they do. Maybe they can hear from all of us to let them know how we feel that they've been the leader in this area of subsidizing the cost of this expensive software, which is $300 to $500, and we hope they continue that with their latest agreement with Code Factory.
Wow. You're right. There is a lot to absorb. So let's kind of first ask a philosophical question. Maybe we'll give Paul Schrader a chance to try to answer it, and if he can't, Darren, just jump in. The philosophical question is, do you, or does AFB, or ought the blindness community, to feel that there's a difference between off-the-shelf phones and phones for which we buy software, i.e., is there a philosophical advantage of one over the other in your eyes?
Well, I didn't hear Paul jump in, so I'll give a shot at that. Boy, you know, it seems, you know, many people are very happy with the off-the-shelf phones that give halfway accessibility, where you can get caller ID, you can make a contacts list, you can learn your phone status and use the basic phone information. And I understand. I think that's great. A lot of us use those phones. I have one that I use sometimes, but I honestly most of the time use a smartphone with I have a couple because I do, you know, a lot of work in this. So I have the Smart HAL and the MobileSpeak smartphone. And I use that because I get full access to everything on the phone. When I was at the ball games this weekend, I could pull up the website and show my buddies how much money they had lost on the football games and get to chuckle at them as they were worrying about their earnings going down the drain. But, the real point, though, about those phones, and my philosophical point is we ought to have more of that available because that's what everybody else has available on the phones, and particularly in your job. If you had to, because of your job's nature, use a PDA where you have access to email and access to documents on the road and things like that, and you had to have one of those, and we ought to have more access to those phones. Certainly, I think laws and regulations such as Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act and Section 508, as these get updated, should at least address that. That's something that's very important, that we want to have access to everything, so that we can do a job if need be, or play games, or listen to music, or read books. We're experimenting with book reading, Audible books and recorderbooks.com and Bookshare books and things like that with these phones. So I think we need to have that, and I think it's great when companies like AT&T will reimburse users for that entire cost of that phone. That way it brings us up on the even playing field. We think that's what makes them compliant with Section 255 of the Telecom Act. It's fine that the other phones are available. They're cheap, $20, $50, and you get your basic access. And that's fine for those to have those choices available. I think that's fine, again, as long as we have good manuals to learn how to use them.
Do you have are you minded to talk about actual manufacturers? Let's do service providers first. So we know that AT&T has done a good job of making stuff available, and I guess my experience says that perhaps the best service provider in the off-the-shelf field is Verizon. But let me see if you agree with that, and then maybe you can talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the other leaders in the service providing field.
Can I jump in before you do that?
Jump!
I'm going to give it a try while I can hear it. Unfortunately, I'm missing exactly the end of the questions, which is why I'm not able to respond. Let me say a couple things. One is that obviously this is a partnership between service providers and manufacturers. One of the challenges we run into is the age-old chicken and egg. The service providers tell us the manufacturers aren't providing them with phones that are accessible, and the manufacturers tell us that the service providers aren't making it clear what they want in the phones. And of course, you know, this is one of the challenges in accessibility, right? You've got, it's the same thing as the old days with the automatic teller machines. The banks tell us that the companies wouldn't provide them with machines that talk, and the companies would tell us that the banks didn't ask for machines that talk. We are trying to work both sides of this, as Darren was saying, and I think this is one of the challenges that we run into. Who's ultimately got this responsibility? It's a tough nut to crack. The phone companies and the service providers and the manufacturers, in the end, they play the issues off against each other in terms of accessibility. I would say that the leading service providers, all of them, to one extent or another, have been responsive to us in trying to address accessibility and to try to work toward improving the phone options that they have available, both off the shelf and, of course, using the third-party software. AT&T does have a leadership position because, I think, of their offering. The screen reader initially talks and now mobile speaks, but they've not decided or said, of course, at AT&T what they're going to how they're going to provide mobile speak, at what cost. And I think this is one of the challenges that we still have to work through as a community. Should we be paying a higher cost for software, just as we do with our computers? Obviously, we have to get a screen reader that costs money, and the same environment seems to be developing in the cell phone world. And then, of course, there is the off-the-shelf world, where I think you're right, Verizon is in a leadership position because of the work they've done with LG in working on a fairly robust voice command, voice control type system. Unfortunately, none of the companies, I think, have really brought to the blindness community a series of accessible phones at different price points, from low feature phones to high-end feature phones that are accessible and that are as available to us as they are to the sighted population. Not every phone has to be accessible under Section 255, to be sure, but there really should be a variety of phones accessible, and I think we need to be putting pressure both on the service providers and on the manufacturers.
Darren, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think Paul hit it on the head. Covered everything, I believe. I agree that AT&T has been the leader in the third-party software world, and Verizon has certainly been the leader in the off-the-shelf phone world. But again, I think they have the Verizon on the off-the-shelf phones, and LG, the manufacturer, have a long way to go to improve those phones, and we need to know things about the accessibility, the manual. We need an accessible manual so we can learn how to use those phones easier, you know, so people, it's not all word of mouth through our community. I think if we had an accessible manual, they would really step up even higher. And the other service providers, need to catch up to AT&T and Verizon.
What do you mean by an accessible manual, really? Because I think perhaps it's worth spending a minute defining that. So let me go ahead and address that question to Darren.
That's a great question, because I think that is a question that the folks that write the manuals now need to know what an accessible manual is. For example, right now this afternoon I've been looking at the manual for the latest LG phone from Verizon, the 8350. And the voice command software that's been on those phones for a while has changed on this phone, and learning how to use that's very difficult. The manual that you can get on their website is a straight text file. It is 4,800 lines on, it's a web page. You just click on the file and it comes up, and it's 48 straight lines of text. No headers, no structure whatsoever, so you're just reading straight through. So that's a problem. It also, needs to do a little bit better job of describing phone buttons, things like that, in blind guy-specific terms, where they are, rather than just... A lot of manuals are PDF files with an image of the phone with a bunch of arrows pointing to them with descriptions of the button, so that doesn't work very well. I think what'd be great, an HTML manual with headers and links to the information and actually described what we need to know. This manual for this 8350, from what I can tell, has nothing really about the voice command software that we would use, nothing to tell us how to use it, very, very little, a few lines here and there, but nothing that really gives us the functionality of how to use these phones. So I think an online, since these are technical phones, we would assume that people are high tech, so it would be nice to have an online manual. HTML, I think, would be good. Again, a lot of people are going to want Braille, so on demand, if people call up to their disability services center or their general service customer service line, they ought to be able to get that in Braille on demand. A lot of times people want to put a manual on an audio cassette, and sure, that would be, I guess, accessible, but usability comes into great question. It's pretty painful. I remember taking an accounting class on a cassette in college back in the day, and it was pretty horrid. So a manual on a cassette doesn't work very well. So and even the text file is fine if we have some navigation.
A couple of quick points. I am a Verizon user, as is my wife, and we've actually had pretty good luck at acquiring Braille manuals. The difficult, and those, by the way, are really nicely formatted, so you've got tables of contents, you've got headings. It's pretty easy to find your way around through those Braille manuals, and I give Verizon a lot of credit. They're a little bit behind. I guess it took them about 4 to 5 weeks to produce a manual for the 9900. And that is a huge manual, by the way. It's two huge Braille volumes, and I do have a Braille manual for the 8350. The problem with those manuals is that they are essentially, for the most part, transcriptions of the manuals that are out there, which means that they inherently have all of the weaknesses that you describe. And in particular, since graphic symbols are often used as symbols for the particular functions that you're supposed to use, like a soft key, the right soft key and the left soft key, it's often very difficult to tell which you're supposed to press when. When you figure that out, you've got a pretty accessible phone, and a phone that doesn't, by the way, contrary to the way that they sell it, doesn't have to be operated for the most part by voice. It's actually possible to do an awful lot with Verizon phones without using voice commands, simply by knowing how to move around with the various keys that are available in the phone. And I'm not preaching and I'm not making points for Verizon. I'm really trying to express the frustration that we all are in that it's sort of like half a loaf. And with the 8350 and the 9900, that loaf has almost become 3/4 of a loaf or 80% of a loaf. With the 9900, for example, you can actually read text messages, but there's still that final layer of menus that you actually can't get to, and so it's pretty frustrating. I promised that I would open this up pretty soon, so I think I'm going to address one more question to both of you, and that question is essentially the one that you'd probably expect me to end with. Where do we go from here, and what can we as consumers do to make things better? Let's give Paul a chance to try for it first, and then if he doesn't jump in, Mr. Darren.
Let me jump in on that, Paul. Thanks for the question. I think we can do a couple things as consumers. First of all, we set up on our webpage, afb.org/cellphones, a feedback form where consumers can give some fairly specific information about problems, concerns they have with their phones. And the idea behind that was that we were hearing from companies. We don't hear from blind consumers. We think they're probably satisfied with what we're offering them. I know that that's not true because I know people are contacting companies. But we figure if we can combine the feedback, and we got 80, 90 people to give us feedback within a couple of weeks of putting that form up, and we're still interested in it, We've taken that feedback and shared it with companies. We've combined it. We figure that maybe helps make the point that too, a substantial number who have concerns about different features, different problems with the phone. Sometimes it's just people have the wrong phone. They got bad information to start with. Sometimes it's people want features that simply their phone isn't capable of providing in an accessible fashion. So give us that feedback, and we'll be happy to keep working at combining it to companies and pushing that forward. The second thing, of course, is to look at informal complaints. We decided to help 14 consumers file complaints. They were all against Sprint. We did that for a couple of reasons. One is that we thought if we could focus consumer complaints on one company, we could see whether, in fact, that would have some impact, whether the Federal Communications Commission, which is responsible for handling complaints under Section 255, would take more concerted action, whether the company would respond in a different way. Thus far, I don't know that that's whether it's too early to tell whether, in fact, we're going to have any success at that focus. As you know, many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, we assisted Dr. Bonnie O'Day in her formal complaint, which I think did lead to Verizon's efforts with LG and others, but particularly with LG at bringing about more accessible action has brought about improvement, and that's one of the reasons why we are looking at both doing consumer feedback as well as doing informal complaints.org/cellphones site. You will find information about how to file an informal complaint, which is very easy to do on the FCC, Federal Communications Commission website, if that's the path people want to take, and you can fill out the form. The other thing I think we as a blind community need to do is to keep being very clear about our desire and our need for accessible cell phones and continued improvement in the features that are available from these phones. As a community, we need to make more. We need to be very clear that we want phones that are relatively easy to use, just as sighted people do, so that we can get access to the contact lists, to the browsing and email. I would note that Section 255 does not require companies to make things like web browsing and email accessible on the phones, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be pushing for it and making clear to companies that that's a desire that we have as a blind community. Last thing I'd say is that we should be putting pressure on companies to make these third-party screen readers available. It shouldn't just be AT&T. Every one of these service providers should be doing similar to AT&T. And frankly, the manufacturers of phones should be either licensing these third-party screen readers themselves into their phones or developing their own form of screen reading software that they build into the phone. Motorola did that with some of their phones and had some level of success, but they need to keep improving that as well.
Darren, do you want to add a couple of things as kind of your final thoughts on what we can do?
Yes, thank you. I certainly echo everything that Paul said there. One extra thing everyone in this audience can do, many of you know me, those who don't, send me an email, dburton@afb.net. Just like what Paul Edwards said a second ago when he described his experience with 8350, 9900, and the manual, let me know what your experiences are. If you have one of the LGs you don't like that has bad keys, let me know. Let me know ones that you like the keys. All your experiences there, because I am working on a lot of projects and I don't have all the phone. We don't even have Verizon in our local little neighborhood of southern West Virginia, so I'm actually waiting on Verizon to send me some of those phones right now. So I would love to hear your input about these phones and in general just your ideas. Just let me know. Thanks.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. Once again, your host, Paul Edwards.
I think that I'm going to open things up. I was debating whether I wanted to ask one more question and cheat, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to open it up and let others raise some issues with our distinguished guests. So, one at a time, guys, remember to tell us who you are and where you're from. And the floor is open for questions.
Hello, guys. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I use a Verizon phone, LG, and works pretty good. I'm impressed with what I've heard about the AT&T and Code Factory development. Anybody know if Verizon is working on something with like AT&T where they use screen readers for their phones?
This is Paul Schrader. Our understanding is that Verizon is exploring licensing a screen reader as well, or doing a deal for a screen reader, but there's no details, and we don't know how far along they are in that effort.
They have one phone, which is the capstone of the LG line, the LG 9900, that does many of the things that screen readers do, but of course one doesn't have access to everything. My wife, who is a user of that phone, would probably agree, I think, that we're about 80% of the way there, or 90% of the way there. And I think to put in one of the things that she would certainly say is, on the high-end phones, music's fine, text messaging is fine. The one area that she's concerned about is, so far, there isn't access to the GPS system. And one of her beliefs is that this is an area where blind people have an opportunity to truly benefit, and that we ought to be able to get access to that, and that we've come so far that it's a shame that those phones, in fact, don't go the one extra step.
This is Jim Mueller with the Wireless RERC. I really appreciate both the positive and the negative comments that are being made about wireless technologies, and I would certainly encourage everybody to feed that positive input back to manufacturers and providers, as well as the suggestions for improving. We've been running a survey of people with disabilities about wireless technologies for several years, and we share that information with industry. Like your study, we'd appreciate anybody who's got input to participate in our survey. You can take it online, or you can take it by phone, or take it on paper, but we feed that information directly back to industry in a format that says, here are the things that are being done well, and here are the things that could be improved. And I think that's a very effective way to get companies to respond. They're, as you can understand, a little bit gun-shy after all the hack legislation and the agony of going through complying with those things. And what we'd like to do is get these companies on board to taking the initiative to creatively resolving problems, maybe rather than doing it in an adversarial environment. Wondered how you all feel about what's the best way to approach this.
This is Carl Gruber in New York.
Carl, just one sec. I will recognize you in 1 minute. Jim, why don't you go ahead and give us information about how we can contact you, and then we will explore your question. Where can we find your survey, and perhaps even spend 30 seconds or a minute telling us a little bit more about the organization you represent?
The Wireless RERC is one of many rehab engineering research centers around the country. In fact, Greg Vanderheiden is at another. And what we've been doing at the Wireless RERC, which is in Atlanta, is surveying people with disabilities about how they use or don't use wireless technologies for several years. We have over 1,000 responses to the survey already. We have about 500 people in a consumer advisory network who help with user testing of products, as well as focus groups. And we bring that information directly to industry. We tell them what is good as well as the things that need to be improved. And the response we get from industry is, when they hear that there are things that they're doing well, they're much more likely to address the issues that seem to be problems than if all we do is bring to them just the problems. If you'd like to take a look at our survey, it's available on www.wirelessrerc.org. As I said, it's available there online in accessible format. We also do it over the phone for people who have some screen reader issues, and we make it available in paper format too. But that survey and another survey, which is starting this week for people with visual impairments as it relates to independence in situations like airport, is going to be open for to take the survey this week as well. Again, those are opportunities to be heard. Those are opportunities to get input directly to industry about what they can do better. They want to know, but I think it's helpful to share both the positive and the negative. One of the things we learned through our survey, we've been running it for several years, is that actually usability and satisfaction with wireless technologies, both in service providers and in the manufacturer area, has gone up. like you have already said, there's a long way to go, but I think it's important that industry feels like they are making progress. Because again, the whole hack issue has been a very powerful influence on them, and in some cases a negative.
Let me be sure I've got the website right. It's WIRELESSRARC .org. Is that right, Jim, or correct it if it isn't?
It's www.wireless, WIRELESSRARC.org.
Thank you. That's excellent. Mr. Gruber from New York, you're up.
I wanted to address the fact I just broke my phone that I had, and what I'm noticing is that if you can get an off-the-shelf product that will be useful, if they build in the features, the importance is very great. I use my phone in business, and when I can't get a replacement that has accessibility, in this case I'm finding the same thing that Gary had before, a problem with having tactile buttons that I can read, and I'm using Sprint. They're not very responsive.
I think that may have had some element of the reason why the decision was taken to make Sprint the target, because they often do not appear to be responsive, and they don't appear to have as large an array of products that can do as wide a range of things as some of the other things happen, or as some of the other companies do. Who else has a question or a comment?
This is Brian from outside of Boston. I am a tech instructor, and I'm frequently amazed at statements made by persons who are blind or visually impaired about the inaccessibility of something, only to find out that it had more to do with their lack of knowledge of how to use it. I have no doubt that the vast majority of cell phone products that are out there, or wireless phone products that are out there, have aspects of them that are inaccessible, other aspects of them that, while accessible, may be not particularly usable. But I'm wondering if anybody's done any testing to determine what percentage of users of products, how much do they really know about the product and its accessibility? How much of it is due to ignorance of the individual?
Darren, do you want to tackle that question? It sounds like a Darren sort of question.
Yeah, Brian, we have not done any studies on that. We haven't done any detailed studies on that, on whether the users know how to use their product or not. I would imagine there is a percentage of that, especially because we don't have access to many accessible and worthwhile manuals. I think that would have a good bit to do with that. But in general, I don't know. Most of the people I've come across have been fairly savvy and can get to learn their things. Of course, a lot of people call our lab, and we talk with them about their phones. But I think that's probably true, but probably not a huge part of the problem.
It's Carl Gruber in New York. I'll give you a little background. I'm a computer system engineer, member of the IEEE, and I think I have a fair understanding of how to use my cell phone. My problem is that if I try to get an off-the-shelf product, I find I'm kind of painted into the corner, or I have no choice at all. My present phone, my company's using Sprint, and if I am to go off that contract, I incur a separate cost. I find that if we go the separate but equal route, we're going to find ourselves all painted into a corner. I think we got to coerce the manufacturers and the cell phone companies to provide access.
That's a very good comment, Mr. Gruber. Thanks.
This is Greg. Yeah, two things. First of all, most people don't know how to use their phones. It has nothing to do with, you know, the access or non-access features. Most people use their phones superstitiously. They know a few things to do. Individuals who are blind probably spend more time figuring out how to use their phones than others. But it is true that this is one of the major barriers, is knowing how, finding out information. If you go to a store and ask them, of course, it's almost no help, because they have no idea, even when they have phones that are accessible. I tried doing this, and I knew they had phones that were, and they just said, well, of course we don't. So this is a major problem. The other problem that I just wanted to cite is one of the real impetuses for having the mainstream phones be accessible is there's a lot of times where there's plans and things like this, and you can't get the plans unless you use the phones, the standard phones that are on them. If you want something special, it doesn't work. Or even now we're finding more and more that employers push information out to their phone. In their place, you have to use this particular phone. You can't even have a different phone from the same carrier. It has to be this model of this phone because we use it and our IT department doesn't want to support miscellaneous phones. And this is a real serious problem. And if the mainstream phones aren't, and with the new technologies, and with what is now possible, it's not a technical change in the phone at all. It's just a change in software. The phones already have all the hardware capabilities they need. And this is something I think that needs to be clearer, made more, I think, clear to the not only consumers as to what they expect, but also to the FCC. And the other thing is that I think that there needs to be more of an understanding of some of these barriers, and that just special things for special people isn't necessarily going to work in all cases, although for some people having a phone which has limited focused functions, whether they're blind or not blind, is very helpful. That's not the sort of mainstream approach. Thanks.
Those are extremely good points. And I think that many of the points that have been made with regard to going for mainstream access are actually important ones, and that I would urge that I would urge AFB to consider in the plans that they make over time. Anicio has raised an interesting question, which I'll get to as soon as I give Ms. Paulette an opportunity to raise the question that she has.
And this has a lot to do with the population that I'm primarily working with. Since I serve deafblind clients, a lot of the people who I work with in the community, not only the clients that I work with, but some of the other agencies that I work with, have a lot of deaf people. And I'm getting a lot of text messages. And I'm using T-Mobile, and I have the Samsung Stripe, which allows me, when I want to dial a number, to audibly, reads back audibly what the number is I'm dialing. However, when I go into the text message feature, it doesn't give me anything but a beep, and I'm consistently struggling trying to find a solution for text messaging on a cell phone that is going to work, because most of the time it's the font sizes, it's I can't do anything, I'm not getting any auditory feedback or anything, and I'm really struggling with trying to find an appropriate solution to work with the clients that I serve, as well as the other agencies that I serve. So are there any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the 9900 from Verizon, the LG VX9900 would be a solution for that. And obviously Paul and his wife use that and maybe give you some advice on that. The other routes would be the third-party software phones we talked about, the Symbian Windows Mobile smartphone and Windows Mobile Pocket PC PDA phones with one of the screen magnifier and or screen reader products would be a solution for you to be able to read and compose text messaging. While I'm on, just let me one quick comment, Greg. All your points are great points there. One question for you. I'm curious because I always look to your standards on your website about button design, things like that, key, tactile nature of keys. What are your feelings about phones these days, and why? I mean, I've seen some nibs that no human being could possibly feel keypads like glass. I'm sure the general public doesn't like that either. Just your comments, if you would.
This is Greg. It's amazing that a lot of it just has to do with style, and it's really hard to argue against style when you see what, you know, Apple has done, and by designing things that had great style. Look what Motorola did with the Razr, and so people look at this and they say, oh, you know, if I could style this properly, I mean, skins, these colored skins they put on phones and things like that, you know, kick sales up. So it really gets around to the fact that people buy looks more than function. I even saw somebody who bought a phone and they'd been complaining about it. And so I said, you know, well, you know, didn't you look into it first? Oh, yeah, I had one of these before and it was just as bad. And why'd you get this one? Oh, but it looks really neat. So it's hard to talk usability to companies when they know style. And so the keys that are flat, or the razor keys, you know, these kinds of things, really sell. Now, what you can do is, even on the razor, it's got the, you know, the flat with the little raises between, if those little raised plastic between were a little squarer instead of rounded, they wouldn't have to stick up any more than they are, but they tactically become much brighter, and the ability to deal to feel them goes up. So sometimes we need to perhaps be teaching them things and showing how these things can make them easier. I hate to say safer, because that sounds like someone's actually dialing their phone while they're driving down the street, which, God forbid, we encourage that. But it really has a lot just to do with style. And the style has to do with sales. And so it's really hard to argue that it would be nicer to have more tactically distinct keys when, in fact, that isn't going to help sales at all. If we can come up with things that are tactically distinct and look really cool, that's what we need to look for. And that, you know, you can sell. And then people say, you know, I really like the looks of this thing, and it's really easy to use. But if you compete style against tactile, tactile loses every time.
I'm so glad Greg made the comments he did, because he put it much better than I could about the tactile problems. Now, the issue that the question I've got to show my ignorance now, I was aware that at one time AT&T was sporting a Nokia model 6620 with the talks and whatnot, but as far as I know, they never did support, meaning a money back or reduced cost to buy it, the 6682, nor have they done it on any of the new ones. So if you would tell me where I need to go to be able to do that, because I've got an 82 that I've had for a number of years that I paid unbranded, that I paid $200 for, and then I paid $200 for talks, and love the device. I'm listening to what some do and some don't do, and quite frankly, I'm exceptionally pleased with the things that it will do, including email, all sorts of things. So anyway, if you could, somebody could clarify on how to now qualify for that support from AT&T.
The best thing would be to call the AT&T National Center for Customers with Disabilities.
Anicio Correa a while ago raised a question with a text message, and I want to give him a chance to ask Paul Schrader the question.
Hello, good evening. It's Anicio Correa from Atlanta. I think my question was in regards to what I think Greg had mentioned, that the fact that some employers often require their employees to use the same one specific cell phone, and that cell phone may or may not be accessible to their blind employees. And my question was, if that's the case, wouldn't that be a violation of ADA? Because then the employer is not making the necessary or the reasonable accommodations to make that particular function accessible.
As your host, Anicio, my response would be that there certainly would be some obligation on the part of the employer to make some sort of reasonable accommodation, and I'd be surprised if they were able to get away with requiring absolutely the same phone if that phone was patently inaccessible. I think part of the difficulty is that so many blind employees in that situation would learn to use the very basics of the phone and then would keep their mouth shut for fear of rocking the boat. I don't think often those issues actually make it to the forefront of issues. I want to respond to a text message that I received from Eva Crowder from Winter Haven, Florida, who indicates that Sprint sent her a free and somewhat more accessible cell phone, but still far from really accessible in terms of the phone. And her question is, does Darren or Paul know of any real specific, meaningful steps that Sprint is taking to create more accessible phones. So since Paul couldn't jump in the last time, let me throw it to Darren first, and then if Paul wants to jump in afterwards, he certainly can.
Honestly, from Sprint, I just got two phones sent to me from them. It was the LG Fusik, which is probably the one they sent you, Eva, and it's, again, semi-accessible. Again, there are nibs on the 5, but the nibs, no human being that I know would be able to feel those nibs. And it's a shame they've done a decent job by creating a sort of raised ridge around each key. The perimeter of each key is raised. But so they've got that phone. They've got the Samsung A640, which I've just began to look at, again, in an inaccessible PDF manual. And, you know, keys you can get used to, not bad, but the text-to-speech is a very poor speech synthesizer, which, like Greg said, with the technology today, with the hardware and the synthesis that is available, there's no real excuse for that. So that's what Sprint has. They've got those two phones. On their Nextel side, they've got the two Motorola phones, the i580 and the i355. You can go to our Access World page, afb.org/cellphones, our cell phone page, and there's a link to my articles on cell phones, and it's actually in the September 2006 article of Access World that talks about those Motorola phones. So really, Sprint hasn't done a lot. I have the Motorola Q from Sprint, which I load my, you know, our mobile speak software on there, and a Smart Howl on that one, but again, that's a lot of money. So Sprint really hasn't done a lot in that area, and I believe that's why Paul has focused our, that's one of the reasons why Paul has focused our efforts in this area towards Sprint.
It concerns me, even though I think the Nuance of the Talks people from Germany and the Code Factory people from Spain have done a fabulous job with screen reading technology for these devices, but it's still too screens are complicated. The 6915 that I use, fortunately, most of the commands that I use most of the time can be executed from the keyboard. So I don't know. I'm just really concerned that we don't have what we need. And I look at something like possibly coming down the road, the Icon or Braille Plus, it may eventually have cell phone capabilities. And when and if it does, it's so easy on that device to turn Wi-Fi on and off and to access exactly what's on the menu because it was designed from the ground up to be accessed by a blind person. But the real question I wanted to ask him before I got off on my soapbox, and I'm sorry about that, I'll shut up now, was what is T-Mobile bringing to the table, if anything, in terms of accessibility at this point?
Right now, they're offering the Oasis 22C, the screenless phone that you can find at, I believe it's screenlessphone.com or .org. I'm not exactly sure. So that's really the only one they've discussed with us that they're offering right now. And, of course, they still point to phones that have tactile keys and you can make and receive calls. Do the absolute very basic, and they're kind of calling that accessible. But they're offering that phone right now, and we hope maybe this process leads them to do more. Offer, you know, again, like Paul said, subsidizing the cost of these screen readers. Well, I've got the mic again right now. Let me give you that phone number for the AT&T National Center for Customers with Disabilities. It is 866-241-6568. So again, 866-241-6568.
Hi, this is Anisia from Atlanta. This is a question, I guess, for Darren, and it's, I hope it's not too technical, but Darren, you mentioned before smartphones and Windows Mobile PDA phones and the fact that smartphones are becoming a lot smarter, if you pardon me the pun. And with that in mind, then, what is the difference then between smartphones, a good smartphone, and a Windows Mobile PDA phone, and why would someone go with one option versus the other?
Tell you what, Code Factor on their website, by the way, has a good explanation of the differences, but let me take a shot at it right now. Now we have Windows Mobile 6 platform, so it's the differences are less. The robustness, the power of the operating system they're very close now. Before, you know, you could get Pocket Word, Pocket Excel, Pocket PowerPoint, etc. on the Pocket PC, PDA phones. And I'm pretty positive, by the way, I need to check, but I don't think we have that yet on the smartphones. They do have some, I believe there's one called Vika or Vieka, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. There's a word processor. There are some more robust office-like applications being added to those phones. But still, if you need a really robust system running a lot of word processing, spreadsheets, things, you might want to go with the Pocket PC phones. A lot of those still are operated by the touchscreen. As one person just said, he has one with a keyboard, which is much better. You have keyboard access rather than using the touchscreen. For the ones that only have the three standard Pocket PC PDA buttons, or 3 to 5 buttons, I guess, and still use a touchscreen, it's fairly difficult to access a lot of the features. We often recommend using one of the Bluetooth Braille keyboards or a Bluetooth QWERTY keyboard or even a Braille display keyboard that many people use for the Pocket PC PDA phones.
Let's see if we can give Paul Schroeder a chance to make one final comment.
Final thought from me. Whatever approach you want to take, please be very proactive, very active in making your concerns heard to the cell phone companies. I think we as users need to be very clear that we want phones in a variety of price points that we can use that have accessibility to all of the features. Let's not get, you know, bogged down in what's covered by Section 255 and what's not. We're consumers of this product. We ought to be and need to be able to use this product for its intended purpose. So if you want a phone that has email and web browsing, you ought to be asking for that from companies. We're happy to take your feedback through our website at afb.org/cellphones. Also love for folks to take a look at what we do in Access World. A lot of Darren's work is found there, his reviews of cell phones as well as reviews that we've been doing of PDAs and Pocket Access. And then the last thing, as much as I want people to use things like Section 255 and to make complaints to the Federal Communications Commission, we can't rely on that as a solution. What we need to be able to do is to make our voices heard as consumers. And so I would urge people to be very clear in your communications with companies about your expectations and don't settle for phones that aren't optimal for us. Cell phone companies work very hard to make their phones usable by the general public, and we're part of that public. And I know somebody had put a message up about Apple's iPhone, and I suspect there's been some conversation that I missed about it. It's shocking to me that there hasn't been more outrage expressed about a company that systematically developed something that excluded blind people. And so I think we need to be very clear with those companies that this is not satisfactory, and they really should have and should take access needs into account.
Again, just as a final thought, thank you all for coming and listening in and giving the great comments that we've got. And like Paul said, please let's keep the pressure up on our service providers, our manufacturers, to get them to meet our expectations. Thanks again, and keep an eye on our Access World magazine. We're looking at a lot of other things besides cell phones, and give me a shout if you have any more questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've managed to cover a lot of territory in tonight's program, and I think it might be a good idea to ask that AFB come on in 6 months or so to tell us what progress we've made, or maybe a little longer than that, but so that we can keep a pretty clear eye on where this whole process is going. Paul, I know it hasn't been easy for you in terms of being able to be heard all the time, but your comments were certainly very much... Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation. I really appreciate the number of you that came this evening and hope that you will make Tuesday Topics a part of your weekly opportunity to be a part of shaping the future of ideas for people who are blind. Keep listening to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the place where your ears do the listening and thoughts do the talking. Good night, everyone.